We are continuing our study through Romans, and we are finally finishing up chapter 3 today. And I realize I've said that 3 weeks in a row, but we are finishing it today and moving into Romans 4 next week. What we have done so far is we have looked at all the things that stood between us and God, all of our pride and our sin and our blindness, our rebellion, our arrogance, and we have seen in chapter 3 how God has taken all of those objections, all of those obstacles away, and all the things that He has done for us objectively to make us able to come to Him, to enable us to love Him. And now we are moving in the part of Romans to where we start to talk about what we have to do. What is our response to God's grace? What is the subjective effects of all of this grace? And Paul tells us, first of all, that we have to receive it by faith. He has come to us as our Savior, and we must embrace Him. We have to receive Him by faith as our Savior. And when we do that, we are made righteous. We are made just. We are justified according to His words. We are made right. So let's begin reading with Romans chapter 3, verse 28 through 31. For we hold that one is justified by faith apart from the works of the law. Or is God the God of Jews only? Is He not the God of Gentiles also? Yes, of Gentiles also. God is one. Who will justify the circumcised by faith and the uncircumcised through faith? Do we then overthrow the law by this faith? By no means. On the contrary, we uphold the law. God's purpose in sending Jesus to this earth was to bring us into His loving relationship. He has always been in this loving relationship, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And He wants to bring us into it. That's why Jesus came to the earth. For us to enter into this relationship, we must put our faith in Him. We must trust Him. And when we do that, we are entering into that relationship. Now, every relationship requires two things. There are boundaries, and there is affection. Every relationship, from your relationship to your dog, to your relationship to your spouse, to your relationship with your God, every relationship has to have rules, and it has love. Without love, there's no relationship. I mean, there's just nothing, you know, there's nothing there. There's nothing there to have rules for. We have rules with everybody else, but there's no real relationship there. But without rules, eventually you're going to trample that relationship and you'll ruin it. Let me give you some examples. A friend of mine, a newlywed, been married 2 months, comes home on a Friday night, and on his way he stops and he picks up some flowers. He wants to, show how affectionate, how much he loves his wife. His heart's in the right place. He's just thrilled that she would marry him. He is excited to have her as his wife. He wants to show how much he loves his wife. He comes into the door. He hands her the flowers. Her eyes tear up. She takes the flowers and she walks out of the room. He thinks, that's not what I was expecting. She comes back about 15 seconds later, throws the flowers at him and says, stop wasting our money. Don't you get it? I don't like flowers. How many times do I have to tell you? We don't have the money for this. If you love me, stop being so wasteful. What had he done? He had the affection, right? His heart was in the right place. But he wasn't following the rules. The rules mean you have to find out how this person interprets love, and you keep it, right? On the other side, a man in Philadelphia is going through marriage counseling, experiencing a difficult time with his wife. The marriage counselor says, what you need to do is you need to have a date night at least once a week, and one real special time a month you need to have a date night. So he reserves the finest suite at the nicest hotel in downtown Philadelphia, spends tons of money, takes her to this to dinner at this extremely nice restaurant, and she sits there and she thinks to herself, well, I guess we're supposed to talk about our marriage. And so she says, well, honey, now that we're alone, I'd really like to talk to you about some of the ways that we're just missing each other emotionally, and I don't feel like you're really getting me, and some of the things you're doing that hurt me. And he looks at her and says, really? You're going to ruin this great evening by bringing all that stuff up? I mean, do you really think that this conversation is going to get us to kind of where we need to be when we go to the suite later? And she looks at him and says, I don't care where you are when you go to the suite later. I'm not going to be there. He was trying to follow the rules, but he didn't have the affection. He didn't really care about her. You have to have both. You have to have both in every relationship, every friendship, right? If you are friends with somebody, then you have affection for them. And you have to follow the rules. If they are staunch Republicans, you don't make fun of George Bush. If they are staunch athletes, you don't make fun of how athletic sports are ruining our culture. If they are if they're video gamers, you don't make fun of how video games destroy your brain. You don't do those things. You're observing just the basic rules of decency and friendship. Well, it's no different in our relationship with God. We have to have affection for Him. That's the first law. The first law is love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, and all your mind. You have to have affection. And you have to keep the rules. The Ten Commandments are how He teaches us to keep. How do we love Him? And He shows us how to love Him. But first, we have to love Him. We have to be in that relationship before we can keep the rules. That's why Paul says, he asks the question, do we overthrow the law by faith? By no means. On the contrary, we uphold the law. It is only by faith that we can come into this relationship and start loving God in the first place. Only by receiving His grace can we even begin to love God. And if we don't love Him, we can't keep His rules, because His first rule is to love Him. You see how that works? We have to start by that. Faith does not overthrow the law. Faith is the only way we can possibly keep it. Christianity is a dance. The law is just the steps of the dance. I don't know. I tried to take ballroom dancing. It was a disaster. It was the worst disaster in my dating relationship with Bianca. Because I learned the steps, right? You make the little triangle on the waltz. Actually, that's not how you do it. I can't even do it anymore. But at one point, I could make the triangle. But I couldn't hear the music. I honestly thought if I was doing the steps while the music played, I was dancing. And she kept telling me, you have to be on the rhythm. And I kept saying, there's no rhythm, honey. There's no drum in this piece. And it was bad. It didn't work. I started rebuking her for not following me. And she rebuked me for being stupid and an idiot. It didn't go well. All that to say, the law is just the steps. But the gospel is the music. You have to hear the music by faith before you can do the steps. The faith precedes law keeping. Faith has to precede law keeping, because the first law is to love the Lord. And to love Him, we have to be loved by Him. We have to know that we have to receive His love. First of all, let me show you this. Faith precedes law keeping. We hold that one is justified by faith apart from works of the law. We hold that one is justified by faith apart from works of the law. We have to enter into this relationship by faith. What does that mean? Okay, I'm sorry if I've been using Christian-y words. Let me kind of narrow it down. What does it mean to enter into a relationship by faith with Him? First of all, it means this. You have to believe He's there. You have to believe He exists. Now, that may seem obvious, but it is not. There is a rampant atheism in our church today. And I mean this church specifically, and certainly culture-wide. For instance, there is a friend of mine who's a pastor, a younger pastor, which there seems to be more and more younger pastors these days, was asking me advice because he has to give a letter of warning of excommunication soon. And it's this young man in his church who continually says this: I believe in God, I'm just not interested in keeping his rules right now. Now, we all know what that means, right? He's being sexually immoral and he has no intention of not being. But what I want to do with him is just go, okay, I want to challenge you on your first point of this little cute quip you're using. You say you believe in God, but you clearly don't. You can't. You don't actually believe there is a Lord of the universe who is interested in what you are doing. If you did, you would be very interested in keeping his rules. You'd be very afraid not to. See, what we tend to call doubt, I watched Life of Pi the other day. Sorry, I'll try not to sound all philosophical. But I watched a movie, so I'm smarter than you. You know, in Life of Pi, there's this character who asks, the main character's pretty religious, and this guy is asking him, well, where's the room for doubt? Now, when we say there's two answers to that question. One is a very honest, if you are doubting the truth of Christianity, we welcome that. That's a great way to grow, a great way to learn. If you've grown up in the church and you've never really questioned what you believe, please do. The sooner the better. Doubt whether or not you're a believer. Doubt whether or not any of this stuff is true. The sooner you begin to ask those questions, the sooner you can come up with good answers and keep yourself from shipwrecking your life when you turn 40. If you've never asked those questions before you turn 40, you have got a bad day coming. Okay? So go ahead and ask them now. We welcome doubt. But a doubt that honestly believes that maybe it's true there is a God, because if you're thinking maybe it's true, you're going to be very careful. What masquerades itself as doubt in our culture is this, there's no doubt to it, it's an atheism. I'm absolutely convinced God doesn't care what I do with my sexuality. That's, not to put too fine a point on it, that's really what it is. Tim Keller was recently asked, what's the main thing keeping us from experiencing a culture-wide revival? And he said, sexual immorality. Why would sexual immorality keep us from experiencing a revival? Because it is atheistic. You're just saying, God doesn't care what I do with my body, which means you don't believe God exists. If you believe he existed, you would be very careful to keep his rules. You would want to know that you were in a relationship with him. You're doubting a tradition. You're not doubting God. The first step to entering into this relationship by faith is believing that he exists and he cares about you. Let me give you an example. If you've ever been around guns very often, the second you kind of walk in and you see a gun, you believe that it could do a lot of damage. They're obviously powerful things. You've seen them on TV. But if you've ever been around one that accidentally fired because someone was being careless, and you saw a hole blown in a wall, not saying that I've seen this, but I have. If you've seen holes blown in things where there weren't supposed to have holes blown in them, it changes your respect. All of a sudden, you're scared in a good way, and you believe. It's like that with God. You grow up in the church and around the church, you believe because you're supposed to. That was the way I was. I was an 18-year-old boy in college, and I believed because I was supposed to. I was actually a 17-year-old boy in college. And one night, I was mad at God because he left me all alone, and I was by myself. I had no friends, no one to talk to. And I began to pray, and it was probably one of the few first real prayers in my life when I was kind of yelling at God, and I was saying, Lord, I know you're there and all that. I know I can talk to you and all that, but I need a human being to talk to. And after I said that, I just kind of let those words float out there, and I thought, I'm not sure I'm supposed to speak to God that way. And as I was letting that linger, my phone rang, And my brother was on the line, and he said, "Hey, I'm coming to town tomorrow. I'd love to get lunch with you. Can we get together?" And at that moment, I was terrified. Because the Lord of the universe heard me. That was frightening. And I treated him differently every day since. When he comes crashing into your universe, and you're not simply just believing because you're supposed to believe because you grew up in the church, but you're actually, you know that he actually exists and he hears you, it changes you. And at that point, you're ready to enter into this relationship because now you only not only believe in God, but you're ready to receive his grace. You're ready to receive his grace. You see, the tragedy of what's going on in our church today is our buildings are packed with people who honestly believe they have kept the law of God their entire lives, and yet they have never kept the law the first day because they've never loved him. We've made believing in God, we've made faith into a new law. You know that, right? I mean, you grow up in the church. What's the number one thing you have to do to be in the church? What is it? Believe, right? You got to believe in Jesus. You got to believe at the cross. And so we've just made them rules. We've made Jesus into a rule. We've made faith into a rule. And so we've kept the rules. Yes, I believe in Jesus. That's the rule. That's not being saved by faith. Being saved by faith means you realize you can't keep the rules. It means you realize that you can't make yourself believe what you don't believe. It realizes that you can't make yourself feel bad for sins when you don't really feel bad for them. It means you can't feel what you ought to feel, think what you ought to think, or do what you ought to do, and you realize that. And when you realize that, you will call out to him for grace. And you'll receive his grace. And you'll know that he has accepted you freely and lovingly, and then you will begin to love him. Until you realize that you've never kept rule one, you'll never keep rule one. Isn't that frustrating? Until you realize you're utterly incapable of being what you ought to be, until you stop making faith into a rule and realize it's something you can't do, you'll never do it. You have to call out to him to help you. And I'm asking you today, some of you have grown up in the church your whole life, who've always said that you believe because that's what you have to do. You have to believe. Will you just take a few minutes and doubt whether or not you ever have? Would you just take a few minutes and say to yourself, "I'm not sure I've ever actually received grace. I've always just done the right thing, and believing in Jesus was the right thing, and so I said that I did it, but have I ever really received grace? Have I ever called out to the Lord to save me? Have I ever confessed to him that I don't and I can't do and think and feel what I ought to do, think, and feel?" When you do that and you throw yourself upon his grace, then you're receiving him. And as you receive him, you begin to believe that he's good. Before we can ever keep God's law, we have to believe he's good. Before faith establishes God, that's how faith establishes God's law. You see, Paul's looking at these people saying, keeping the law isn't going to save you. Faith is what's going to save you. And so they turn to him and say, "So you're saying the law is of no use. You're saying, let's just throw the law away." And he's saying, "No, I'm saying you can't possibly keep it until you enter into this relationship by faith. You have to believe he's there. You have to believe you're fall short. You have to throw yourself upon his grace. You have to receive his grace. And once you do that, then he begins to work in you. And he empowers you to keep his law. How? Well, first of all, by believing that he's good. You receive God's law now not as, you know, not as an event in the decathlon. Before you're a Christian, you see the Ten Commandments like a decathlon. 10 events, I have to keep them all. Great, here comes the do not covet event. You know, here comes the do not commit adultery event. I hate this one. You know, it's an endurance. It's lifelong. I hate it. But after you're converted, you believe God's good. And once you believe that he's good, then you receive his law as a gift. I told you before of a friend of mine who literally had decided to have an affair. There was a woman that he knew was willing. He was kind of out of love with his wife. He drove over to her house to initiate the affair, sat in her parking lot, and the Lord brought up to his memory Psalm 84. The Lord is gracious and good. He will withhold no good thing from those who love him. And he thought, I know the Lord loves me. And he's withholding this woman from me. Therefore, she can't be good. And he drove home, and 20 years later, he's still married to his wife. Why? Because he received the law as a good thing. Because he knew the Lord loved him. Because he had received Christ. Because he knew if the Lord loved him so much to give his only begotten Son, he can trust him. He can receive him as good. If we're keeping the law because we have to, we're not really keeping it. But if we're keeping it because we love him and we want to be with him and we believe that he's good, then it just doesn't feel like we're keeping it. It just feels like a dance. It feels like a dance. We have to begin keeping the law by faith. Faith precedes law keeping, and then faith empowers law keeping. Once you hear the music, you can dance the steps. Do we overthrow the law by faith? By no means. On the contrary, we uphold the law. Once you receive God's love, then you can respond to him in love. Once you receive God's love, then you can receive his law and go, oh, he's not trying to keep good things away from me. Once you receive God's love, you can start loving other people. How does this work? First of all, the first commandment, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, sits over the first four of the Ten Commandments, right? What are the first four commandments? Love the Lord your God, love him only, worship him only, worship no other gods before me. Well, why would you want to worship anything else? Has money given its son to save you? Has success offered you eternal life? Has sex offered to fulfill you and bring you out of darkness into light? Why would you want to love anything else but him? Nothing else is lovable. Once you receive him by faith, of course you're going to love him only. Nothing else is worthy of loving. Let me stop for a second. Because I feel strongly about this. I'm going to go back and beat up on you who grew up in the church for a second. If you haven't grown up in the church and you're here, hey, we're glad you're here too. But I got to ask these church people a question first. Do you love the Lord? Do you love him? Not are you keeping the rules. Is there affection in your heart? Do you find him delightful? Do you find him pleasurable and sweet? Do you love him? If you don't lie to him anymore. Just tell him right now, Lord, I don't love you. I don't find you lovable. And let's just be honest for a little bit. And let him show you that he is the only thing that's lovable. You can't keep the law if you don't think he's lovable, if you don't think he's good. Ask yourself that question. Is he good? Can I trust him? Do I actually trust him? Do you love him? If you do, then it's easy to see how you worship him alone. It's easy to see how you don't sell him short. You don't worship him through pictures or images because they're not as good, they're not as true, they're not as perfect. If you were to walk into a person's living room, and you saw the wife there staring at pictures of her husband, and her husband was right there going, "Hey, look at me." You think, she's weird, right? Love him more than the picture. But I like the way he looks in this picture. I don't really like the way he looks. I mean, it may be understandable because you can touch up pictures, right? That's why the Lord tells us not to love him through images. We make those images look the way we want them to look. Sometimes the way he actually looks isn't the way we want. But he's better. We don't use him to validate our points. We don't take his name in vain. We don't just kind of use him to say, I'm right. Doesn't it drive you crazy? Don't you hate it when somebody's trying to prove their point by quoting Jesus and you know they don't have any idea what he meant? They're using the Lord's name in vain. Don't use him selfishly or shamefully. That's how we keep the law by faith. That's how faith establishes the law. It shows us that he's lovable. And these are just the rules. Don't buy him flowers. He doesn't like flowers. He wants you to worship. He wants you to rest. Take one day off in seven. You don't have a choice. That's not my rule. He commanded it. I don't get it why people want to debate this one. I'm just like, okay. He commanded me to take 7 out of 7. I've done it. He says 1. So we do it. We take one day off and we worship him. Because he's valuable. The closer we come to him, the more we grow, the more aware we grow. The closer we come to him, the more aware we grow of how far short we fall. The more aware we are of how far short we fall, the more we cry out for his grace. The more he lavishes his grace upon us, the more we love him. The more we love him, the closer we come to him. The closer we come to him, the more aware we are of how far short we fall. The more aware of how far short we fall, the more we cry out for his grace. The more the more he lavishes his grace upon us. The more he lavishes his grace upon us, the more we love him. Isn't that a beautiful dance? That's the dance. You can only dance it by faith. That's why you have to confess. That's why you have to repent. That's why you have to receive his grace. And as we dance with him, we begin to dance with our neighbors. We look up and we realize it's a line dance. We thought it was just about him and us, but it's actually about all these other people around us. And they're all doing the same thing. And we begin to love them. The more aware we are of how far short we fall from him, the more aware we are that these people around us that we used to look at and kind of not like, you know? I don't like y'all. But now I realize that you're like me. And I don't look down on you anymore. When Christianity was about rule keeping, you see, I looked down on all y'all because I was better than you. Y'all didn't keep the rules as good as I did. But the closer I come to Jesus, the more I realize that I think y'all are actually doing better than I am. When you fall, I get you. And I'm able to love you. And if you really want to grow in grace, then you need to look at the people that you're having trouble loving right now. You need to look at the people that you kind of hate right now. You need to ask yourself why. What do I need to learn? What am I missing about me? What sin is it in me that's making me self-righteous and making me refuse to see the truth? I need to stop blaming everybody else, stop seeing everybody else as problems, and start seeing them as people and loving them so I don't hate them because they remind me of Jesus. And I don't commit adultery because I respect them and I'm not here to use them to make me feel better. You see, the closer we come to the Lord, the more he lavishes his love upon us, the more loving we become toward everybody else. I had a great, I was there. It's rare that I'm actually there when the light comes on for somebody, but I got to see this happen like in a split second with a Muslim. He was exploring Christianity for the first time, and I was trying to explain to him how the law is the law of love, and we only keep it out of love. You can't keep it any other way. And he said, well, I don't have to love somebody to not steal from them. I just have to keep the law. And I said, but if you love somebody, you won't steal from them, will you? He said, oh, wow. It works. I mean, I could just, you know, just not steal from you to make myself better with God, but that's self-righteous. But if I just love you, if I just love you, I'm not going to spread rumors and gossip about you. If I just love you, I'm not going to covet what you have. I'm just going to be thankful that the Lord blessed you. Oh, wow, that works. That's how this dance works. That's how the Lord keeps us from stepping on each other when we dance. And the final thing I want you to see is that that faith transforms our whole view of the law. Because we love Him, then the law becomes this way of showing our love for Him and showing our love for each other. And the law and the rules of Christianity stop being rules. Right? You know what the rules of marriage are? Well, the best book on the rules of marriage I've seen is a secular book called The 10-Second Kiss. She says the number one rule of marriage is you have to kiss your wife the first time you see her every day, come home from work or whatever. When you really first greet each other for the first time, you have to stop whatever you're doing and kiss each other for 10 seconds. Isn't that a horrible rule? Let me give you the hint, husbands. If you think that's a horrible rule, don't say it out loud. You do have to kiss your wife. You do have to kiss your husband to be a good spouse. But if you're doing it because you have to, we got issues. You don't have to keep God's law. You don't have to worship Him alone. You don't have to love your neighbor. You get to. You see, before faith came to your life, you couldn't. You weren't able to. But now you get to. You get to. Please pray with me.